Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm very excited. I have two lovely people on Zoom with me. I've got Melinda Hensley and Matt Clifford. Hey, you two.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, Jeff.
All right. So we just did a wonderful interview. I think we went over an hour and you got to learn all about these two. By the way, I'm just going to interrupt myself. Matt Clifford, you just lifted up your coffee cup. And that's the name of the company from Office Space, is it not?
That Inatech. It is, Inatech.
Yep. He's got an Inatech mug, so you know he's a film buff. Which is perfect because this is a four questions episode of Discover Indie Film. The episode before this one, you got to listen to Melinda and Matt talk about how they got into the film business and their independent film Across the Room, which if you want to see a really funny, really original comedy, it's called Across the Room, and you go to Discover Indie Film, which is a TV series on Amazon Prime Video. Just go to Prime Video on the nicest, biggest TV you can find and type in Discover Indie Film into the search field. Go to season six, buy season six or buy just episode one, but just buy the whole season. It's $8 for a season and you get like 25 indie shorts for $8, and you're supporting filmmakers who more often than not are making films out of their back pockets because they love it. So support said filmmakers and watch Discover Indie Film. Watch all 7 or 8 seasons whenever you're listening to this. Maybe it's 12 seasons by now. I don't know. Maybe you're listening to this in like 2026. But anyway, these two are going to answer the Discover Indie Film four questions in this episode, which are name three favorite films, name an underrated film, name an overrated film, and name a lesser-known film that people should seek out. And I can't, you know, because I have a bad memory, I can't remember who you agreed to go first. So who wants to go first and name three favorites?
I think we said Melinda would go first. We keep on the track with her.
I had hoped you'd forgotten. Happy to go first. So my top three favorite films, Best in Show, which is a mockumentary from Christopher Guest, truly one of my all-time favorites. I really love When Harry Met Sally. I simply cannot escape it. I always put it on. And as I mentioned in my interview, I grew up on Miyazaki films. And up until a couple of years ago, I would have told you that my favorite Miyazaki film was Princess Mononoke. But that has recently changed. Kiki's Delivery Service is my favorite Miyazaki film. And it has changed. My opinion on that has changed for all the right reasons. If you haven't seen it in a while or you've never seen it before, go do it. It's masterful filmmaking and such a lovely heroine story, and she's just great. I have such a love for that movie. So
it's almost an impossible task to pick three favorites, I know, but then to pick your favorite Miyazaki is
what a struggle, honestly.
Because they're all so wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's and if and when one has children, not everyone should have children, but we watched all of them with my stepdaughter. We just could not get enough of those films.
Yeah. I grew up on them. They're fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic. All right. Excellent list. I'll add that Best in Show, I did do a silent golf clap on Zoom for Melinda to see, because I think Christopher Guest, he's the Michael Jordan of mockumentary.
Yes,
and absolutely. Best in Show is, come on, it's easily the greatest. It's just, there's just not a bad moment in that film.
Really?
It's the most funny. It's you don't get better. Okay. Wonderful trio of films. Now it's Matt's turn.
Well, I have to go with Caddyshack. I love it. I love Doug Kenny. I love the cast. It pulls me in every time I watch it, and has been a huge inspiration to me as just a writer. And I find, I love that movie. I had a feeling Melinda would say When Harry Met Sally. So I kind of just put a dash by that, knowing that she might say it. So, I put, Midnight in Paris. And then for the third one, I put The Sting.
The Sting, very nice. By the way, Caddyshack. I love that, because the question is three favorite films, right? It's not the three best made films of all time.
Right.
And Caddyshack is about as much fun as you can have, especially when you see it. You probably saw it as a adolescent the mm-hmm. first time. And it's kind of the perfect film for adolescence.
I saw it as a kid the first time I saw it. I was probably 8 or 9 years old when I saw it for the first time.
You know, I got to go. I apologize for the tangent, but I got to go to like a 25th anniversary screening of Caddyshack. Maybe it was 20th. With Harold Ramis doing a Q&A afterwards.
Amazing. I'm so jealous of that.
And he was so funny because it was his first directing gig. And yeah. I have to share with both of you because you're both directors at heart anyway. And you're about to direct together. And he said, it was my first directing gig. And once we were on that golf course and I said, can we shoot this direction? And every member of the crew turned to him and said, we got everything lined up for the other way. And he just looked at them and they looked at him and he said, well, I guess we're going to shoot that direction. But he was all, I think he after I said, and honestly, the direction I wanted to go was probably like the lighting was like the sun was going to be wrong. Like, but he, but I love that. Like he just got completely outvoted.
I had a tough battle between the Midnight in Paris and Dazed and Confused.
Oh, and Midnight in Paris, you're talking about the Woody Allen one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is an excellent film, I have to say.
Yeah.
I appreciate, I'm going to throw shade if you don't mind. Love that that's the only problem I have with Woody Allen films is how often it's about someone dating someone the age of his granddaughter.
Yes.
And Midnight in Paris, we don't have that plot.
Finally. Yes.
Finally. So we get to see a creative story from one of the greatest screenwriters and directors ever. Although at this point, I'm cool with him being canceled. I'm totally cool with his cancellation.
Yeah.
I have issues with his moral judgments, but you know, like I love Annie Hall. I think that's a classic. And, but yes, I do have my issues with his,
moral
standings at times.
I completely, for anyone who tries to argue that Woody is savable, and I have friends who do. I'm like, just watch the documentary. Watch his son's documentary.
I've seen it. Oh, I've seen it. Yeah.
And there's no doubt that Ronan and his sister are telling the truth.
Oh, his poor sister. She, yeah.
Yeah, Woody's a monster. Mm-hmm. But just like Picasso was a monster, but I can't say that I don't love Picasso's painting. Well, then I should change that
to Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused is also
one of them. How about The Sting? How about that Paul Newman and Robert
Redford? How about The Sting? I actually think The Sting was one of the first films my parents took me to see at night.
Really?
Hmm.
At the drive-in in Burbank that's not there anymore. But anyway, The Sting is an amazing film.
Love that movie so much. Yeah.
And one of the best soundtracks ever.
Love that sound. Oh, wow. Yeah. Brilliant score. Yeah.
Bravo. The definitely golf clap for The Sting.
Thank you.
You've both named three lovely films. Well, now it's Matt's turn to go first, so you can give us your underrated.
The Two Jakes.
I don't even know The Two Jakes.
The Two Jakes is the sequel to Chinatown.
Oh, I do remember it.
Yeah, I believe it came out in 92, and it just kind of flew under the radar, and it was Jack Nicholson back playing Jake Gittes, and it was a really well-done noir mystery that I thought was extremely underrated. I enjoyed the hell out of that movie.
And because you mentioned, I just looked it up and Jack Nicholson directed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Harvey Keitel is in it. It's so well done. Yeah.
See, I probably had an attitude towards the idea of a Chinatown sequel so much later that I'm glad you made that you're underrated because I probably intentionally overlooked it. I shouldn't do that.
It's worth the watch. It's really, really good. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, Melinda, underrated?
1999's The Mystery, or 1999's Mystery Men. I love that movie so much. I can quote that movie from start to finish. For anybody who does not know, it is a fantastic like spoof on the superhero genre. And boy, is it good to return to now, especially given like the oversaturation of superhero movies and stuff that we have. It walked so the boys could run. It has everybody in it. It's got Hank Azaria in it. It's got Ben Stiller in it. It's got William H. Macy in it. Kel Mitchell is in it. And
Janine Garofalo, my favorite. Garofalo.
And Eddie Izzard is in it. There's
Jeffrey Rush. It's got Jeffrey Rush.
There's a moment at there's also a moment at the a particular like little cameo, and it's Michael Bay is also in that movie for a hot minute. Watch it. There's also, and I mean, at the end, for your efforts of watching it, you are treated to the sounds of Smash Mouth. I cannot, like, it's fantastic. Go see it now.
There were also a lot of movies in the late 90s where we were all treated to Smash Mouth at the end.
Listen, we all loved Rat Race. It's fun. Like
Shrek, Rat Race. Smash Mouth cut a deal with the studios.
Yes.
Well, just like how many trailers had Sabotage?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some songs are just meant to play in a theater, I guess.
And then Springsteen had his run of, like, you know, Jerry Maguire, Dead Man Walking. It was like, oh, it's going to be deep. It's going to be a soulful one. Streets of Philadelphia.
Although if we're going to talk about people who added lots of music, lots of songs to movies, I'm going to go back to one of Matt's top three, Caddyshack.
Kenny Loggins.
Kenny Loggins.
Oh, yeah.
King of pop hits for movies.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be a fun list, too. I'm sure that list is on BuzzFeed or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Wow. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm rubbing my hands together because now it's time for Overrated. And I believe it's Melinda's turn to go first.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Based on your hesitation, I'm going to add, you're not throwing shade. You're not saying a film is bad. You could say this. I love a film. You can even love a film. It's just for one reason or another, the zeitgeist of cinephiles are overrating a film. Even though it's not a bad film, you're not saying it's bad. You're just saying, you know, look, for me, I've had so many people tell me Godfather 2 is better than Godfather. And I'm like, no, Godfather 2 is overrated. It's not nearly as good as the first one.
No. And you're taking us to like Vegas and you're out of the, yeah, I agree.
Cuba stuff. Come on. And no, forget it.
Oh yeah. The Cuba with Hyman Roth and all that. Yeah.
Just like, it's good, but it's, I don't even, whatever. So anyway, yes. But it's a great film. Yes. It's just I can't handle people saying it's one of the few sequels that was better than the first, because I'm like,
I just love the containment of the first. It was all in New York and it was all this, and then Godfather 2, you're going from here to there, and it's like we have the budget to fly to these locations. It's like, okay, I gotcha.
Money grab for sure.
Yeah. All right, that unlocked, so now Melinda, that unlocked, does that help? Something within you both. That was great. So I had a hard time choosing between two, which somehow might make me worse.
You can name both.
Sure. One I do not like, and I'm so sorry, and I've tried to. I really did, and it's recent. I don't like Nomadland at all, and I wish I did. I watched it with a friend of mine, and afterwards I was like, that's the longest movie I've ever seen. I would care to never watch that again. And I tried to, and I'm so happy for the recognition that like Chloe Zhao has gotten. That movie is for somebody. It is just not for me. But yeah, he didn't like it. So that's like kind of the one where I just genuinely didn't like the film. The one where I did like the film, but if I have to hear one more person talk about The Dark Knight, I will vomit. I'm done. I think it set us off on a path that, though really, really revolutionary at the time, has just been done to death, and I'm done. And I feel like it's just such a, it's already outside my wheelhouse anyway. So I understand that. Like, I'm not a big superhero person, but boy, howdy. I'm not about it. I wish I were, but.
I support you 1,000% on both picks. And I would argue with you though. I don't think anyone loved Nomadland. Nomadland was an original, interesting, really good little movie,
mm-hmm.
But there's nothing but it's not a great film. And it certainly, and if it had been a little film that like played and a couple of people were like, I saw this really interesting film about home people who live in their cars and travel around. If it didn't get Oscars and shit, it would have been fine.
It just felt very, so in the way that you mentioned that The Godfather 2 was kind of like a money grab, this felt like an Oscar grab, intentionally made to appeal to the Academy itself. And I just, a lot of it rang really, really hollow for me. Like it, the moments that should have felt emotional really just kind of felt like they were contrived to get an award at some point. And I just
I've not seen it. So I have no, I can't say anything about it. I have not seen it. But I have kind of gone out of my way to not see it because I just, from what I've heard, it sounds like a bore. Maybe I will tune in on Netflix.
Whereas I believe with the expectations game that we have, like, so I obviously watched it because it was an Oscar contender. It was already nominated. I think, yeah, I always do that lame thing where you try to catch up and watch all the things nominated for Best Picture. Whereas I think if I watched it, having heard everyone shit on it for a while, for like a year or two, like at this point, I think I actually think that a lot of people mention it to me is overrated. Even people say Chloe Zhao, they say she's wonderful and they love all her other films and this is the least good film she's made. They say her other stuff is great. Okay, but anyway.
We'll talk about Eternals at some other date, but that's neither here nor there.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, I didn't see that.
I didn't see that either.
But I think if I saw Nomadland after hearing so many filmmakers tell me I would see it as a cute little nice experiment.
Yeah, I'd seen it when it was in contention, but before it had been awarded, but it's still just not for me. And I get that and I understand that about it. So
I appreciate what you said, because yeah, that's what I love to say. It's just not, they didn't make it for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But we get Matt's overrated now, yeah?
Yeah, I also had it narrowed down to two. The first one that came to mind was Avatar. I remember seeing it opening day, Christmas, in the theater, and I...
Well, then I assume you didn't run out and see the sequel that came out 17 years later, or however many.
Yeah, no, that's not happening. I feel like at some point I will be forced to watch it, either because I'm going to be flipping through like TBS or USA, and it will be on both simultaneously. So I will end up probably watching it at some point. But I had Avatar, and... Oh, this one was kind of rough, and I was hesitant about doing it because, well, okay, like you prefaced it, it doesn't mean it's a bad movie, just not for me. So A Clockwork Orange.
Interesting. I loved it when I was younger, but I often think to myself, will that hold up? I do kind of want to see it again.
It just wasn't, I've seen it several times. I didn't just watch it once and dismiss it. I have seen it several times, and it's a very popular movie, but I've always felt like it was overrated.
Fair enough.
Any consolation, I'd watch A Clockwork Orange over Avatar if someone held me to it.
You know, fair enough. I actually want to give Melinda a little more backup. I got so focused on Nomadland, I would just go ahead and say that Christopher Nolan didn't even like making Batman. I think all three Nolan Batman, the Batman that he did, I don't think Christian Bale liked playing the character, and I don't think Nolan liked writing. I think he just said, okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try to make the superhero film interesting for me.
Right.
And I bet if Chris Nolan and I were sitting down drinking wine, he'd say, yeah, I tried, but I really couldn't like that kind of film. The comic book movie is just too simple a premise for me.
I just think it's
been... That's kind of what it felt. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Sorry.
No. You cannot talk about that movie without talking about Heath Ledger's astounding performance, but it's just, I have heard it It's for me, because of how often I've heard it referenced in my life, it kind of strays into that, like, the people who are like Dark Knight bros are like comparable to like Quentin Tarantino bros. Like, Quentin Tarantino makes like really fun movies, but like, boy, do I not want to have a conversation with a Quentin Tarantino bro.
I'm going to add, yeah, I'm using the word tangent way too much with you two, but my tangent here would be like, I think it's also a lesson that superhero movies in the hands of true superhero fans and comic book fans like Kevin Feige and the Russo brothers, all of a sudden you get wonderful films.
Yeah. But when
other filmmakers are told, hey, do a Superman. Hey, do a Batman. Hey, yeah, do a Spider-Man. They're like, okay, I'll try to be Kubrickian and do just play with the genre. But the truth is, leave it to those who love it. Because Christopher Nolan clearly doesn't love comic book movies.
Well, and it means
he made three mediocre ones.
Yeah. And it means so much to that art form, because comic book superheroes, it is an art form, and it means so much to so many people. Obviously, it doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot to me, but when it feels like things are just being pumped out for the sake of being pumped out, they start, like I said, they start blending together, and not necessarily in a good way. And I feel like I said, that view, that take on the superhero is an interesting one. It's an interesting layer to get into, but once it proved to be astoundingly profitable, then it just became, we'll do that viewpoint as much as we can, regardless of like who it had. It doesn't have anything to do with the people who really cherish it anymore.
And I mean, the comic book thing, it's obviously dominates everyone who's interested in cinema, because I mean, the comic book movie has been, it's kind of become the only thing that's keeping the industry alive in a way. But
yeah,
yeah.
I actually think the best one was the most recent. I think Matt Reeves, the Batman.
Oh, I like that one. That was good.
I thought they finally got it right.
Yeah.
You know, and actually Matt Reeves, I think, is like, I love those Planet of the Apes reboots too. I just think it's all good. Two genres two properties that Tim Burton pretended to do.
That Tim Burton, Mark Wahlberg, Planet of the Apes was, ouch, that was bad.
Just, was you know, horrible. Leave it to the people who love it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because cinema's about love.
Tim Burton should not do remakes. He should just do his own.
He's a mother scratching genius when it...
it's his original stuff, it is. But when he does like... When he remakes Willy Wonka, that there was no heart to that, and he remade Planet of the Apes. It's like, what is this? But when he does his own stuff, love it.
That Miss Peregrine's School for Exceptional Children, or whatever.
Yeah.
That fucker should have been nominated for Best Picture.
That was
I think that film is remarkable.
Yeah. I like that movie.
That movie, we watched it over and over with the kid, and I was glad that the kid loved it, because I'm like, this is amazing cinema. All right, we've blabbed on for a good while. So now it's the last question, a lesser-known film for people to seek out. And I do believe Matt goes first.
I went with The Commitments.
Oh, the band, the Irish band.
Yeah.
See, I'm the right age to know that film, but it probably is lesser-known.
Yeah, I think it came out in like 92 or 93. And I just, first time I saw that, I was like, this is... Yeah, Irish film, great, great movie.
It is great, and the music is great.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love that movie, and to this day, I could still just, if I saw it on TV, I would just watch it, or I think about it all the time, the movie, the soundtrack, yeah.
Love and that. I'm not enough of a buff to have this memorized. I brought it up on my phone very quickly, directed by Alan Parker, who is... one of the great directors of all time. My God, that's
right. That was Alan Parker.
Yeah. I mean, the guy did Evita, for Pete's sake. So anyway.
Yeah.
And I believe he did The Wall.
Did he do The Wall?
Didn't he do The Wall? Didn't Alan Parker direct The Wall? I think I Alan Parker. Now that I've said that, I'm scrolling through his An Angel Heart. Yeah, he did Pink Floyd The Wall.
No, wait. I thought... Pecula did Angel Alan Parker.
No. Alan Parker.
Did Angel Heart, the Mickey Rourke, Robert De Niro one?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and he happened to direct a little film called Fame and a little film called Midnight Express that a few people quote.
Oh, he's done some lesser stuff.
He does The Commitments, which is freaking fantastic that someone with that standing went ahead and tackled, you know, a film of unknowns, all unknowns, and just a film about the passion of music. It's wonderful.
All unknowns, all filmed in Ireland. Not much of a budget. I don't really think it made much of a blip in the box office radar out here, even though it was released. But yeah, love that movie.
Wonderful movie, yeah. I will always remember the scene where they criticize the guy, the sax player. That's a jazz haircut.
Yeah.
All right. All right. And Melinda, it's your turn. Lesser known to seek out.
Yeah. So I have two. One of which is called Shiva Baby. It was released in 2021. And it is wildly fun. I won't say any, I don't want to give anything away about what it's about. I think people should go in cold. But one of the things that astounds me about this movie every single time, not only the performances, but the score is wild. It's like a coming of age comedy that takes place at a Shiva, at a wake. And it is, the score is the score for a horror film, like, because there's so much that my tagline for that movie would be, oh no, don't worry, it gets worse. Like throughout that entire movie, it is absolute anxiety, but I liked it, like not in an Uncut Gems way that made like my insides hurt, but like it's really good. It's the quintessential like thing of like getting a character stuck in a corner and not necessarily giving them a way out. It's real good. Go see it. Go stream it. And then the other one is a movie that I put on way more than I ever expected to bring things back around to Caddyshack. It's called A Futile and Stupid Gesture. And it is about, it's about Doug Kenny, who had kind of started the Harvard Lampoon. And he's played by Will Forte. And it's just really, it's done in such a like Lampoon-esque way. It knows what it is. I think it calls itself out for the moments that it like presents, and especially the moments in like that history that aren't like, that wouldn't necessarily fly today. And the, like, it's that, right? So, but then it's also about this man who just tries to avoid or deal with a lot of the trauma in his life by just working himself to death and just like using humor to truly, truly cope. And like anybody who writes comedy or who has used comedy in that way before, or likes to work to avoid problems, which is, you know, nobody, should go watch it. It's really, really interesting. It's really, really funny. And it's that whole like living up to expectations thing, comparing yourself to other people, comparing yourself to what's funny in the moment. Yeah, it's real good.
And it's a beautiful history. I know there's also a documentary about the founding of Lampoon, yes, which yeah, is also wonderful. But yeah, I think that's great. And honestly, thank I think you. I would, like the saying goes, I would watch Will Fort read the phone book.
Yes. Then you get to see Joe McHale play Chevy Chase.
Yes. With a suitcase full of cocaine.
Yes.
I'm sorry, briefcase.
Full of cocaine.
Briefcase full of cocaine, which I believe was accurate, but.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And am I wrong? Did Chevy appear as something else in the film? But anyway, I would watch Will Forte. Actually, I heard an interview with him where he said Forte.
I don't think Chevy Chase appeared in the film.
No, I'm just. Yeah, Joel McHale was great as Chevy.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone was great in that film.
They really were. Yeah.
That's a wonderful thing. And I would watch, I think Will Forte's Last Man on Earth sitcom is one of the best sitcoms ever made.
So good. It is so good. Yeah.
I binged that by myself because couldn't get the life partner interested.
I am so glad that Fox took the chance on that one. It was great.
It was truly great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've landed on a wonderful thing. And yeah, Futile and Stupid Gestures also just, I'm so glad they made that film because National Lampoon was so special at one point. And like it meant something.
Yeah.
And it devolved. I believe I knew people who were producing films like, oh yeah, for if you pay them $100,000, you can make any comedy, National Lampoon's, you know, apostrophe S, and then, you know, shitty college movie. And like they would just rent out the name to anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So unless you're a certain age, you don't realize just the impact of National, that it was National Lampoon's Animal House and Vacation. And
yeah, it's this lovely serious business of not taking yourself too seriously. And I think as comedy writers, between Maddie and I think that's a line we try to walk all the time, because at the end of the day, if we're not having fun doing this job that we do, then why are we doing it?
Exactly.
Yeah, if we don't,
and comedy is an amazing way to throw stones at the establishment, right?
Yeah, and just a way to like unwind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's when Melinda and I do it, it's not work.
Mm-hmm.
We have fun with it, and you know, it'd be long hours, long weeks, long days, but it's never been work when we're doing it together.
Yeah,
absolutely. Lovely. All right. Wonderful place to stop. I actually have it in front of me. So I'll mention that for anyone who wants to follow these two, Melinda's Twitter and Matt's Instagram will be clickable links in the show notes. So I won't bother reading them out loud.
If you're an angry comic book fan, hit me up. Like I'm so ready to pay for my sins.
To date, I don't think anyone's ever been skewered for an opinion. And by the way, I want you to know you do have support. You are not the only person who said The Dark Knight is overrated.
Oh,
definitely not.
Well, look at that.
And I have a very good friend who, when I told him that I don't really like The Dark Knight, he said, oh, that's such a bummer. I'm going to miss you as a friend. But he was joking. We are still very good friends.
I saw it at the Arclight, and I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to go and grab a drink. And I did that a couple of times. I was like, I don't care.
I hear you. There's someone, I'll get myself in more trouble and say, someone should just do, you know, one of those YouTube edits where you cut out everything but the Heath Ledger scenes. And then you actually have a halfway decent film. But the shit with the two ferry boats, and like, oh
my God.
Rich people suck and poor people are awesome. Like, okay, Chris, like you want to really simplify the world like this?
Yeah.
We'll watch the
menu. It was supposed to be dramatic.
Yeah. Yeah. Just we have the menu now for that. Go watch the menu instead.
Yeah.
I should watch the menu, shouldn't I? We're wondering about where we're
watch
Glass Onion. Now I think the menu's next.
Give it a whirl. Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Anywho.
All right, you two. Thank you so much. I'm gonna ramble on with the things. So first of all, you two just heard the excellent taste in film that Melinda Hensley and Matt Clifford have. And even if you disagree with some stuff, I think you'd agree that they have insight into film. So you should watch their film Across the Room. It's in the Discover Indie Film TV series. Just go to Amazon Prime Video on a nice big TV, type in Discover Indie Film. I think around the I, it auto completes. There's a Discover India, but I think Discover Indie Film comes first somehow. And enjoy the series. Oh, I think I might have forgotten to say this, but please watch it, buy it or rent it, and then write a nice review and give it 5 stars. If you're listening to this podcast, if you don't mind, like and subscribe to the podcast if you can. And if you want to learn more about this podcast that gave birth to a TV series on Amazon Prime Video, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. There's a lot of stuff there, like more. There's even movie reviews there at some point. And if you want to learn on social media, it's at DIFWINS is for Discover Indie Film. I think I mentioned the intro that Across the Room was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020. We hold that festival every November. And if you want to learn more, you go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. There is a sister festival called Film Invasion Los Angeles. That's filminvasionla.com and at filminvasionla on social media. Both those festivals are ranked in the top 100 best reviewed festivals in the world on Film Freeway by filmmakers. So it's a great honor out of 12,000 festivals that those two are two of the top 100 at this moment. It's when they're not accepting submissions, they get knocked out briefly, but that would only be the month or two when we're not accepting submissions. So anyway, why'd I qualify it? Top 100 best review, very proud of it. And the last thing to mention to anyone still listening is just go to watch. Editor's note, every time I say Hi TV, I should have actually said TV Hi. The service has been rebranded. It is called TV Hi, as in watchtvhi.com, TVHI. And you can learn more about it on social media if you go to @watchtvhi. And that's always TVHI. Back to the podcast. That is a new streaming service / smart TV app where all the content is curated to be wonderful to watch when you're high. If you're the type of person who gets high and is responsible about it, don't get in trouble. Don't ruin your life. Not everyone. Some people just have a body chemistry it doesn't work for. Try to acknowledge that. God, I'm so full of conflicts, aren't I? Here I am celebrating cinema to watch when you're high. But I really do care about the friend or two I've got who actually can't risk it. But I'll tell you, when we had the live event at the theater and everyone got high, there was one dude there and he's like, I'm just going to have a couple beers because marijuana totally sends me off on the wrong thing and I would not have fun. And he still loved all the films. So
good.
There I go, making motherfucking excuses for the fact that I think it's fun to have an edible and watch movies. What can I say?
Hey. Jeff, you contain multitudes. You are not one faceted.
I'm conflicted, that's for sure. But I like multitudes. That sounds better. I love you writers. You come up with nice ways to explain it away. All right. Melinda Hensley, Matt Clifford, thank you both so much for doing this.
Thank you, Jeff. We really
Jeff, thank you for allowing us to do this. Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.